to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, August 6, 2020. University of Juba allows students to write exams from home.
You will try your best, and if you fail, you open the book, you go to internet, you search, you get some answers there. But during examination, they will not allow you to open book, to search on internet, you suffer there alone.
And floods destroy farmlands in Jonglei State.
All the crops are damaged. As you can see, the water is all over the palm, and the crops are rotting.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Farmers in Bor say recent floods destroyed their crops after a dike on the River Nile broke, causing floods in Bor town and the neighboring villages. The farmers say several crops have been submerged and are rotting under the water. Aid officials and agriculture experts say the floods could affect food security in the area. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
40-year-old Jacob Anyar walks along his flooded sorghum farm outside Bor town, surveying his 1.5-meter-tall sorghum crops, which are partially underwater. Some of the leaves have turned yellow, while other crops are rotting. Speaking in Dinka, Anyar says he does not expect to harvest anything from his 2-fedan or about 2 acres sorghum farm.
All the crops are damaged. As you can see, the water is all over the palm, and the crops are rotting. The problem is that the floods came when the crops were still young, so there is nothing at all that is being expected from such a farm.
Anyar says he used to harvest 25 to 30 sacks of sorghum each season before this year. He worries about looming anger in Bor.
What I am left to do now is just to hope for what God and the government might do for the people affected like us, because my family will have nothing to eat. Otherwise, there is a fear of severe hunger. If the water subsides, maybe that is when farmers will see if they can plant quick maturing crops to rescue people from hunger.
Agricultural expert Atim Digag Atim from the Jonglei State Agriculture Ministry says the floodwaters will not subside anytime soon and more flooding is expected.
We are talking now of the overflow of the river. And this month is the month where the overcreeping waters comes from the east. So we are still waiting for the east, the eastern floods that come from the highlands of Ethiopia. So, in fact, I'm expecting no production this year. The areas of Duk seems to be higher, but still the overflow of River Akobo, River Gilo, River Pibor will still affect Duk.
Since the sorghum was in the emerging stage after the first weeding, when the flooding hit Bor, Atim says he expects his crops and most other crops will be ruined this season.
No survival of such things. Not for maize or groundnut or anything. Jonglei, the former Jonglei, is at the bottom of the Nile Valley. This is the bottom of Nile Valley that reaches 450 meters above sea level. So we are the lowest. So all waters of South Sudan may come here. It doesn't tilt towards Greater Bahar Ghazal. We are now underwater.
Atim says there is looming hunger in the flooded areas of Jonglei and other parts of South Sudan. He says in past floods, people could rely on fish that comes with flood waters to survive, but not this time.
This flood doesn't come with fish, simply because this flood is coming from the highlands, from the main river that is flowing from Lake Albert. The flood that come with fish is the flood that if the dams are closed in North Sudan or in Sudan and Egypt, then the upper stream here builds up, then this comes with a lot of fish. But the one coming is coming with a high speed that no fish in it.
The Integrated Food Security Pace Classification, or IPC, report released in February by UN agencies and the government indicated hunger was projected to worsen this year in South Sudan, mainly in Jonglei, Upper Nile, Warab, and Northern Bahr El Ghazal, especially in flood front areas. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
From Bor, we move to Juba, where the University of Juba has decided to allow students to write exams from home. The university authorities say examination questions will be distributed to students who will write what the authorities called takeaway examinations from home without invigilators. The university's academic officials say students who did not sit for the final year exams when the government closed schools in March to prevent the spread of COVID-19 will benefit from the take-home exams. The university's academic registrar says students will be given a day to bring back the answer booklets and take next examination questions. Critics say this will allow examination malpractices. For VOA News, David Monodanga reports from Juba.
The South Sudan government shut down all schools and universities on March 20th to prevent spread of the coronavirus. At the time, some students at the University of Juba had already written their end-of-semester examinations. Professor Myri John Blackings, the university's academic registrar, says the open book examination is different from the university's normal exams.
What we test is completely different sets of skills. The key skills that we test is analysis of situations. We may give students data, and how do you apply? It's apply knowledge that we're looking for. How do you apply the knowledge? Something that you cannot copy and paste.
Professor Blackings says students will have one day to bring back the answer booklet and then will take home the next exam. He says allowing at-home exams will ensure that students do not miss this school year. He says the university is particularly focused on preventing female students from dropping out of school while schools remain closed.
South Sudan is notorious for early or teenage marriage. Sometimes the only protection these female students have against such a practice is the fact that they're in classroom. And if they're not in classroom or in schools, they're open. They are completely vulnerable. And this is what we want to prevent.
One of the students, Josephine Keji, says the open book examination is easier than strictly supervised examinations.
You will try your best, and if you fail, you open the book, you go to internet, to your search, you get some answers there. But during examination, they will not allow you to open book, to search on internet, they will suffer there alone.
Reverend Father David Tombe Leonardo, former education coordinator in the Catholic Diocese of Juba, says examinations that are taken home will not be credible because of the lack of supervision, which he says opens the door to cheating.
There is a possibility of somebody doing examination for someone, and somebody will simply pass. There is a possibility that somebody also has the text and will simply copy. That really will not be an examination.
The exams started on Monday, July 27th. Father Leonardo says the best thing the university should have done is call students to sit at the university under supervision while following strict coronavirus preventive measures.
The credibility of the certificate that somebody will get thereafter matters a lot, because if a person really gets high mark and what he gives out does not correspond to the qualification that the paper says, this is something different.
The Media Development Institute, or MDI, in Juba is also giving students coursework which will be marked as their final semester examinations. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Banjul, where Gambian authorities will impose a curfew beginning today to fight a surge in COVID-19 cases. With a population of 3 million people, the country has recorded around 800 cases with over a dozen deaths. At least 4 senior government officials have tested positive for COVID-19. Reporter Pandari Mbai in Raleigh, North Carolina, has this story.
Dr. Lamin Cisse is the chairman of the TRRC. He explained the decision.
In the light of the growing seriousness of the COVID-19 situation in the Gambia, the commission has decided to suspend its public hearings till further notice. The suspension will take effect immediately.
The Gambia has a population of close to 3 million people. It has recorded 671 cases of COVID-19 and 14 deaths, and the figures have been spiking. Cisse says public health and safety are important during such emergencies.
At a time when the number of COVID-19 cases in the country is rising at an alarming rate, the Commission is deeply concerned about the safety of both commissioners and the staff of the TRRC, as well as our media partners, our witnesses, our security personnel, and indeed all members of the public.
The TRRC has been mandated to investigate cases of human rights violations perpetrated during Dictator Yahya Jammeh's rule. Its work is covering July 1994, when Jammeh toppled the administration of the late Sir Dauda Kairaba Jawara, to 2017.
While the Commission is very keen on completing its work and submitting its final report and recommendations in good time, we are conscious of the fact that continuing our public hearings may put some of the lives of everybody concerned at risk of a COVID-19 infection.
Meanwhile, the Commission Secretariat will remain partially open, with some staff coming to the office and some working from home.
During the period of this suspension of public hearings, the various committees of the Commission will continue working on their various agendas. The Commission will also continue working on putting together some aspects of the final report. This work has already started and will continue unabated.
The TRRC's work is supposed to last 2 years. The Commission says it is fully committed to delivering its assigned mandate as soon as possible. For VOA News, this is Pandari Mbai reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Nigeria is keeping its young population busy during the COVID-19 pandemic. Find out how after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how can you help someone dealing with depression?
I just give my time to that person and we discuss matter concerning that depression which that person is facing.
First of all, I'll find out what is depressing that person. And when I find out the root cause, of course, I try to advise the person according to what he or she is going through.
By counseling the person through counseling and then sharing ideas. Maybe sometimes going out for football or watching football, movies, such things can also help.
I recommend music therapy. Music therapy in the sense that music has a way of giving a soothing feeling whenever the person listens to music.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the coronavirus pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and noses when we are in crowded areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A UNICEF-sponsored COVID-19 innovation challenge saw some 80,000 young Nigerians submit community-based solutions to the coronavirus pandemic. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
28-year-old Chukwu Mangwachukwu's solar-powered water pump is still a work in progress, but his goal is to supply clean water to communities in Abuja that do not have access to it.
I started developing the idea as soon as I, saw the problem. I also did, a couple of research to also understand how this innovation will be beneficial to the community. One thing that really stood out for me is the fact that this solution is reliable, it is cost-effective.
Nwachukwu is among tens of thousands of young Nigerians who entered the UNICEF COVID-19 Innovation Challenge that was launched in May and continued for 6 weeks. Each week, there was a new winner with the best idea or innovation to combat the impact of COVID-19 in Nigeria's communities. Nwachukwu's solar pump idea was the winner in the first week of the challenge.
Imagine if a community with a population of over 2,000 people have access to clean water, this would go a long way in ensuring that people in these communities can easily wash their hands and not, transmit the virus.
Other young innovators such as Habiba Erin Falami, a medical student, created an online community market for buyers and sellers to carry out transactions while limiting exposure to the virus.
The reason we are allowing people to shop from only their community is because we do not want dispatchers to go far away to go to other communities, thereby exposing themselves.
UNICEF says the innovations show how young people can contribute positively in difficult times. UNICEF's Kolawole Ladijobi is the project coordinator.
Many of us have underestimated the power of the youth in Nigeria. This is evidence that the youth are ready to work and ready to cause a change in their families, in their communities, and as well cause a change for Nigerians as well.
An estimated 60 million Nigerians, or about one-third of the country's population, do not have access to clean and safe water, according to the non-profit WaterAid. At a time when proper hand washing and social distancing measures are key to stop the spread of COVID-19, the UNICEF effort to foster innovations by young people like Nwachukwu and Erin Falami can bring hope to Nigeria's communities. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
And from Nigeria, we move to Cameroon, where the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, says poor roads and the threat of further Boko Haram attacks is preventing it from helping civilians in a camp for displaced people in northern Cameroon. The UNHCR says hundreds of displaced people and aid workers are trapped in the camp, which militants attacked over the weekend, killing 17. As Muki Edwin Kinsika reports from Yaounde, the UN is calling on Cameroon's military to help.
Olivier Guillaume Biye, UNHCR representative in Cameroon, says he remains concerned by the situation in Gauchewe, a village attacked by Boko Haram fighters last weekend. He says he was part of an emergency UN mission to assess the situation and evaluate the protection and health needs of those affected. He spoke on Wednesday in Yaounde after visiting the northern village on the border with Nigeria.
We found people were in a situation of fear of another attack, and traumatized because there are people who had already fled other attacks from the armed groups. We are advocating for the security to be reinforced. We could not provide assistance as we are doing in other sites because of the threat of violence, but also because the roads are poor, inexistent, rendering any movement very difficult.
Beer said some of the displaced people were insisting on leaving the Ngauchewe village camp, and some had left. He quoted some of them as saying that it was not the first time they were attacked by Boko Haram on Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria. He said they need urgent psychosocial care and humanitarian assistance. On Tuesday, Cameroon officials, escorted by the military, brought food and humanitarian aid from President Paul Biya. The village and surrounding areas have suffered neglect because of Boko Haram terrorism. Schools, hospitals, and some markets have been abandoned and access roads have become dilapidated. Mijiyawa Bakari, governor of Cameroon's far north region, says it is not easy to channel international humanitarian assistance to Ngaochewe and surrounding border villages. Bakari says more troops have been deployed to protect civilians and humanitarian groups. He says the fighters will have very difficult moments in the days ahead as more troops from the multinational joint task forces of the Lake Chad Basin have been deployed to secure the border. He says militias have been equipped with motorcycles and communications facilities to quickly inform the military of any suspected movement. He says the government is aware fighters have infiltrated the villages. The camp, attacked by Boko Haram on Sunday night, houses 800 displaced people. After the attack, the UN reported that more than 1,500 villagers and displaced people had escaped to the nearby town of Mozogo and surrounding bush for safety. The villagers said Boko Haram fighters had infiltrated communities. Nurse Marie-Giselle Ngeshe leads a group of seven humanitarian workers from the Evangelical Lutheran Church of Cameroon. She says Boko Haram threats have stopped them from going to Ngaochewe to assist the sick and wounded. She spoke via a messaging app from the northern town of Mozogo. She says the number of wounded people from the weekend's attack in Ngaochewe gives her an idea of Boko Haram cruelty. She says her group was ready to go and replace their colleagues in Ngaochewe, but were told by local militia groups that Boko Haram had infiltrated the area. She says the militias warned them against going to the village and said their peers cannot leave the village either. The UN reports that Boko Haram violence in the Lake Chad Basin region has cost the lives of 30,000 people and displaced more than 3 million others. The UN also says Boko Haram remains a threat and the decreasing humanitarian assistance from donor agencies makes it look like a forgotten emergency. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Nelson Boateng, the CEO of Neplast Eco Ghana, went from making plastic bricks to recycling them. He now makes bricks made of sand and plastic that he hopes will one day be used to pave all of Ghana's streets. Lauren Anthony of Reuters reports.
Ghanaian entrepreneur Nelson Boateng's company Nelplast used to make plastic bags, but now it recycles them to make building materials. After his environmental U-turn, he hopes one day he will pave all the streets of his native country.
It's during 2015-2016, there was a threat on ban on plastics. And I was then into plastic bag manufacturing. So I have to think of a way to keep the business going by going into the bricks instead of producing poly bag with plastic waste. Second is anytime they mention about flood, pollution in the environment, I feel very bad because I know I'm a big contributor. So those are the things that move me from producing a poly bag to the bricks. Because with the bricks, it goes out not to pollute, but also to save the environment.
Set up in 2018, Nelplast Eco Ghana Limited now employs some 74 workers and an additional 300 plastic collectors who pick up from open-air dumps, blocked waterways and abandoned sites. The waste is weighed, washed and crushed at the factory before being mixed with sand. 30% of the mix is plastic. It's then moulded into tiles, paving, bricks or blocks to produce eco-bricks. The company produces between 600 to 1,000 bricks a day from around 5,500 pounds of plastic. and they are also a third of the price of concrete ones. Boateng hopes, though the use of recycled building materials is still in its infancy in Ghana, that in time he can provide a sound, environmentally friendly alternative to products from established industry giants. He also says eco-bricks are a more practical solution than concrete, as they are lighter, stronger, more durable, mould-resistant, and they offer better insulation.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
During this pandemic, the World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say if you have a fever, a cough, or have trouble breathing, you should stay at home and contact a healthcare facility. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest health news.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. The World Health Organization and U.S. Centers for Disease Control say coughing and sneezing can spread COVID-19. Physical distancing, staying at least 1 meter away from people outside your family, can protect everyone. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with Dut Ayuel with the song Nyalikda.
Nyalinda ye, nyalinda wo. Pinda na bingi tugu yeriam kai kwa. Pinda na bingi tugu yeriam kai kwa. Nyalinda wo, nyalinda ye. Pinda na bingi tugu yeriam kai kwa. Pinda na bingi tugu yeriam kai kwa. Nyalinda wo, nyalinda wo, nyalinda ye. Kenda ikinunda. Kadia wela donga ya bel nyali. Hagadia wela dong ye ben nyalinda. Hagadia wela dong ye ben nyale. Nyalinda o, nyalinda ye, nyalinda o. Kenda ikinundol. Kadia wela dong ye ben nyali. Hagadia wela dong ye ben nyali. Kadia wela dong ye ben nyali. Agadia o ela dong ye ben nyalenda nyalinda o nyalinda ye kenda ikinundol nyalinda o kenda ikinundol agadia o ela dong ye ben nyalenda nyalinda Nalinda ye, nalinda o, kenda ikinundo. Nalinda ye, kenda ikinundo. Kadia wela dong ye ben, akadia wela dong ye ben. Na dong la nuara wari nalinda akading. Na dong da wara wan nyalinda katingo na dong dan ditolong nyalinda kating na dong dan regogo nyalinda katinga na dong dan an nyalinda katinga na dong dan wara wan nyaling kating na dong dan wara wan nyalinda katinga na dong da wara wan nyaling.
We've been listening to Dut Ayuel with the song Nyalikda. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes, phones, and vehicles. Remember to do your part to fight COVID-19 in South Sudan by washing your hands with soap, practice social distancing and not escaping from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Matar ko na le tika tinga, matar ko na le tika tinga.